Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, and I am so excited to introduce our guest today, Albert Tate. Albert is a popular Los Angeles pastor. He has written several books, and one of the things that we're going to be talking about today is his new book called Disobedient God, Trusting a God Who Goes Off Script. And I love this conversation. I love the title. We talk a little bit about what that is, but we're really talking about how to invite God to sit with us in our struggles and how do we find rest in really challenging times, especially when we don't understand and we have the questions of what's going on, God? Like, how is this happening to us? And so it's a really fun conversation, even though it's a hard conversation, hard topics. He is just so entertaining, and I think you are going to love this conversation. So please welcome Albert Tate. Hey, Albert, thanks so much for being on Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm so excited to have you, and it's been a bit. We've been trying to connect for a little while, and so now I believe that this is going to be the most perfect interview because it's taken us so long.
It's going to be worth the wait. It's going to be worth the wait. I'm so honored to be here and so glad to be a part of the podcast.
Thank you. So I'd love to just kind of dig in. I just want to go for it because I have a lot of questions for you. You've written several books, and one of the ones that you just wrote, I love the title, and I'd love for you just to kind of talk about that. I wonder if you got some pushback from that title. It's called Disobedient God, Trusting a God Who Goes Off Script. Tell us a little bit of why that title, and tell me, I'm just personally wondering if you got any pushback from it.
Yeah, no, some people have said it's so irritating until they read where I am. And then it's kind of one of those things, you critique it, but then once you understand it, you see yourself in it, and it's like, ouch. Disobedient God we talk all about the times when God showed up just in time, when I needed a bill paid and I got an unexpected check in the mail, when I needed the tumor to shrink, and I came and the doctor said it was gone. I want to talk about the times when we needed a bill paid and the lights actually got cut off. I want to talk about the times when the tumor needed to shrink and it in fact got larger. And what do you do with a God who refuses to follow your to-do list or your prayer list, if you will? What do you do with a God who refuses to surrender his will for yours? What do you do with a God who goes off script? What do you do with a disobedient God, a God who's insistent on his way? Now, the whole premise is, I don't know about your life in how you treat people who are disobedient to you, but when my kids are disobedient, I don't want to fall down and worship them. I don't want to be like, oh, you such a sweet, bless you, oh, sweet child. No, it bothers me. I have a reaction to it. And if it's true with my children, I argue that it's true with our God. You may not call him disobedient, but you felt his disobedience. You felt him going off script. You felt him doing his own thing, out doing things that you would never co-sign, you would never authorize. And my question is, how do you respond? What do you do with that? And how do you process that? And I want to give us freedom to talk about it because I think it's something we all experience, but we don't talk about enough in our faith communities.
I agree. So you're a pastor, and I'm sure you hear this a lot. I know when I was growing up, we're a little more fearful to talk about feeling disappointed in God because we're not supposed to be, right? But in our hearts, when something has happened that we can't understand in our own, you know, mind, it's really hard. I'd love to know just personally, is there a time that God went off script for you? And is that kind of the inspiration for why you wrote this book?
Yeah, it's tons of moments. One of the most recent is we had our fourth child. So I've got a 17-year-old, a 14-year-old, an 11-year-old, and then we have a 5-year-old.
Busy.
So that 5-year-old, we almost named him Tequila because we were trying to figure out, like, how did he get here? He was born with an umbilical cord tied around his neck that if we wouldn't have taken him the day we did, it was just really, really risky. So his birth was just a miracle. But then we discovered some delayed development and he started getting words and then he lost all of his words. Mm. He went back to babbling. And that's what triggered us and signaled us to do some more thorough testing. And we discovered that he is on the spectrum with autism. Now, we've got three kids and we had, his name is Micah. That's our baby boy who's 5. We were 40 when we had him. We were 40 years old.
My parents so had me at 41. And
oh my, so there's hope.
There's hope. They say it kept them young.
Yo, well, I don't know if that's working. This dye in my beard, me dyeing my hair is keeping me young. So right now, that's the only thing. But you want to talk about something that we never prayed for, that we never asked for, something that if given the option, we wouldn't have signed up for. Now, it's proven to be just a blessing. We just went to his little preschool graduation, literally just left there, and it was unlike any of our other kids. It's just a different, we are in a different world. We had to walk him up on the stage. He stood there for about 30 seconds and then was like, I'm out. Well, and the reason why he said I'm out is because the crowd started clapping when he got up there and it freaked him out. So he took off and started running. I was like, this is different. This is unique from the other three kids. When having a fourth child, I said, we know what we're doing. Let's just throw this kid in the routine of the other three and we figure it out. No, God said, I got something completely different for you. Mm-hmm. He went off script. And so there are times when, yeah, we grieve that. Although we've seen a lot of hope and there's so much work with autism and so many examples and models of parents that are navigating this. So we don't feel alone at all. But I wouldn't sign up for anything that was harder. I don't know anybody else that would sign up intentionally for something that's hard. We got something that was harder. God went a little off script. But the whole key to the book is learning to trust him when he does. Learning to trust him when he does. And that's what we're doing. We're trusting him as we're navigating a future that we would have never planned or written, but we are embracing and being blessed by it.
I love that. I think sometimes we hear that story of like, this was really hard and then we got through it. And I think what your book does is kind of shows that messy middle of like, what does it really look like? So just tangibly like asking you, what did it, when you think back of those days or any time you feel like kind of God went off script or you were disappointed in a circumstance or grieving, how did you invite God or did you invite God into those difficult moments? And my second question is, how do we help our kids do that? Because when they see us do that, that's an example for them. I always say it's more caught than taught. But as we're doing that, how are you helping your kids ask God to come in their difficult moments?
Yeah, I think what do you do with a disobedient God? If you ask the children of Israel based off of Exodus chapter 32, they would tell you, we would just replace him. So they just, sometimes God gets off script and he takes too long and you just replace him. They looked at Aaron. This is a fascinating story. It's a fascinating picture. They look at Aaron, who's like the second in command. Moses and God are up in the mountains and they've taken too long. So they look to Aaron and they say, literally, build us another God. They literally say, let's replace this dude. Build us another God. And Aaron complies. So he tells them, give me your gold. So now you got this picture where they're longing for God, but they're reaching for gold, which then forces the question for all of us in these moments.
What are you longing for and what are you reaching for? And do you know the difference? We are longing for intimacy that can only come from God, but reaching for pornography. You're longing for rest that can only come from the Father in restorative rest, but you're reaching for medication and medicating yourself and numbing the pain. You're longing for comfort that can only come from the Holy Spirit, but you're reaching for food. You're reaching for a Big Mac, a number one combo, extra large Coke with light ice if you're me. So what do I do and what have I done in some of those moments? I've had to learn, Albert, you've got a longing, but it's for God. So what are you reaching for? And are you numbing something? And are you trying to fill yourself with something? Because you're disappointed, you're emotionally distraught, you're upset. Where do you go? Where do you go? And what I want to learn in these moments and what I want to teach my children is, number one, what you're longing for, only God can satisfy. So pay attention to your reach. Are you reaching a relationship? Do you want a relationship because you're lonely and you're isolated? Then you don't need to reach for a relationship. You need to reach for God so that he can fill that void and make you whole. My kids, trying to model for them and just say, you have a deep longing for God. And this world will present you with a whole lot of options. And some of them are obviously bad. And some of them are good and normal, but could become bad, because when good things become ultimate things, they become destructive things. So how do I match my reaching with my longing? You're longing for a peace that only God can give you. Don't try to find that peace in people pleasing. I think I'll feel better about myself if everybody liked me. No, don't reach for that. Reach for the pleasure of God. Live for the audience of one. And if he's pleased, then you're all good. So in these moments of disappointment and God's disobedience and crisis, pay attention to your reach. Pay attention to where you go, because where you go is an indicator of who your God is.
One, I want to tell you about this incredible resource for moms and daughters. I don't know about you, but that relationship can be hard sometimes. And so there's a new guide called Helping Moms Raise Confident Daughters by Tara Matson. And basically, it's a resource to help develop and keep a loving, secure connection with your daughter while helping her be confident in all that God has created her to be. Here's what the courses entail. They are for every age and every stage of your daughter's journey. They include 8 video lessons for mom, giving behind-the-scenes coaching on mental, emotional, and physical world of our girls. They give conversation guides to foster deep discussions between mom and daughter, and a downloadable journal to spark a more intimate connection between our daughters and God. You can visit cpguides.org to learn more and purchase the course made just for you and the age and stage of your daughter's journey. Go to cpguides.org. So in that, because I've seen that a lot in my own life, in pain, you know, I'm Enneagram 7-8, and we do not like to be uncomfortable. We love fun. We love adventure. And so when we're having to sit in that space of uncomfort, you want to do everything you can to like get out of it. And so what I've learned is like there's a place that you have to sit in that pain. You talk a little bit about this in your book, that there's beauty in the pain. And I think I always hear that and I'm like, that is the dumbest thing I have ever heard. There is no such thing. There is not beauty in the pain. Like if I am, my leg is being amputated, that is not beautiful. That is painful. Yeah. However, since we've gone through some stuff and some grief, you know, I might not see it in the moment. And in the moment it is pain and pain and pain. But then I can look back and see that. So help us figure that part out. When we're in that grief and despair, how do we even get our minds to be like, could there be beauty here?
Yeah. And here's the thing. A pastor says this, and I never forget it. He says, God doesn't waste pain. Well, that's the first thing. God's not going to waste pain. So if you find yourself in pain, know that it's not going to be wasted. God has a way of using all kinds of very, very crappy things to create something very, very beautiful. As a matter of fact, there's an actual scripture in the Bible that talks about him turning ashes into beauty. He says he'll give you beauty for ashes. The thing is, we always look at the beauty, but hey, that was some ashes. That means something was burned up. That means something. This beauty costs something. Here's the beautiful thing about pain. Pain is an indicator usually of something greater that God is after. It's usually an indicator light that points to a greater thing. It's usually the symptom of a greater thing. So for example, I went to a foot doctor and the foot doctor was just telling me stories. I just love hearing stories of their experience and their world that they live in. He's telling me a story about a guy who comes in and his foot wouldn't stop bleeding. Like his foot, he could try to do everything to his foot. It would not stop bleeding. And the doctor had him come into the office. He saw him walk and he saw the bloody sock. He saw that his foot was bleeding. And so he took the sock off and examined the foot. He discovered in the heel of his foot, there's a nail about this long. Well, this guy has a disease in his foot called neuropathy. And neuropathy removes all feeling from your foot. So he had a condition in his foot where his foot could not feel pain. And because he could not feel pain, he had no indicator light to say something's wrong and this is where it's wrong. Pain is a gift in the sense of it shows us where something is wrong. It shows us where pain, where something has maybe infiltrated in a way that's terrible. So this guy is dangerous because since he can't feel pain, there'll be things wrong that he'll never be able to identify. So in many ways, God uses pain. So we got to change our relationship with it. Number one, yes, nobody likes it. Nobody wants it. Nobody was, you know, hands down, nobody invites this in. But if anybody who goes to the gym and works out well, what they've done is, and I say they because I haven't, but people that get running and get the gym and stuff, they've adjusted their relationship with pain. They've come to an agreement in an understanding that there's a level of pain that is required for the level of growth that I want to see in my body and in my health. So I'm willing to endure the pain because on the other side of soreness is strength. So they've changed their relationship and they wake up early. Some of these people are just crazy. Y'all crazy. I know y'all listening. Y'all are crazy. You will wake up early. So the pain of waking up early, the pain of your body being buffeted and just challenged. But you know something that my big old behind still trying to discover is that there's health, there's beauty, there's even energy. There's even energy. Mm-hmm. Endorphins kick in on the other side of invited pain. Now, and I get it. I hear people, some people are going through pain that it ain't a gym workout. It's the loss of a loved one. It's a bad medical diagnosis. And I'm telling you, God knows how to show up in every bit of that pain. And he's pretty aware of pain himself. That's a big part of his story and why he gets to be God. It's a part of his resume. It's a part of his qualification. So it's kind of one of those things, God, if I got to go through it, if I can go through it with you, can you help me manage and make it through the pain? And Father, don't waste it. Would you use it for your glory? And he has a great track record of doing that.
I love that. I think that is one of the things, instead of looking, what I've learned is just instead of looking for the outcome. So I remember going to my counselor, and I'd never been to counseling before and kind of all new to me. I'm like, so how many months are we going to have to do this until everything's better? So could you give me a timeline of like how many times I have to come in here? What do we need to talk about? Do you have your game plan? Because here's my game plan. And I was just wondering if you could match up with that. And she just laughed. And one of the things that I've really been learning and trying to grasp is I might never understand whatever it is, the circumstance. But if my goal, instead of a certain outcome, because that's what I get attached to, is a certain outcome. And if that outcome doesn't happen, my outcome, whatever I think is best, there's a disappointment attached to that. But if my goal can be intimacy with Christ and God through that, then that it will never disappoint. And so it just, I had to change my complete perspective of this might never get better. It might never get better. There might never be relief from this. There might never. And when you're in that type of deep grief and pain, you literally never feel like you will get out of it. So those who are listening, who are in that space of like, I will never be happy again, or I will never smile again, or I used to be joyful and I will never feel that, you know, you will. But right now it feels like you never will. And if for me, just changing that perspective of, okay, I'm sitting in it. I don't know the outcome. I don't even know if the outcome is going to be the outcome that I like. But if I can change my mindset a little bit to intimacy with him as being my outcome, then that changed, that helped me a lot.
Yeah, that reminds me. You know, one of the things that I'm learning is God quite possibly is way less interested in the answer to your prayers, way more than you think. We approach God like we want answers. Some of us, we even got the prayer and we just got a line and say the answer goes right there. And it's only a one word answer.
And we might even give him like a multiple choice. Like you could pick A, B, C, or D.
We just want that answer. And I'm just discovering God may just not be as much into answers as I would like for him to be, or as I would hope for him to be. It's kind of like this. I remember I was terrible at math growing up. As a matter of fact, when I went to Bible college, I took the Book of Numbers and that was my math requirement. That was it. That was all you got out of me. But I remember being a kid trying to figure out math, just laboring over these math problems. And I never forget when I first, for the first time, realized my book fell open to the back and I realized the answers to the problems.
The odd numbers.
The book.
The odd numbers, always.
Yo, I started killing my homework. I'm just turning in the answer. I'm just killing it so much so. Miss Oliver said, Albert, can I meet with you after class? I said, of course you can, because that's what A students do. They hang out with the teacher after class. So yes, let's go. So I go, and Ms. Oliver, she says, Albert, I see your homework has been doing really well. I said, oh, thank you, Ms. Oliver. You know, to be honest, it's your influence over me. You're such a great teacher. You've just done such a great job. She says, yeah. She says, but I noticed that you haven't been showing your work. I said, huh? She said, yeah, Albert, it may surprise you to know that although I appreciate the right answers, I'm much more interested in the process that you choose in which to get there. That shows me your comprehension level. That shows me that you understand the mathematical dynamics that are at play. So while the right answer is good to have, I'm much more interested in your process because it shows me how you're thinking. It invites me into where you really are. I think God may be way less interested in our right answers and way more interested in the process. Like you said, it's about the journey and me inviting his presence in the journey. What if God is all about the journey? Some of you are listening right now and you're waiting on an answer. And I think in the waiting on the answer, you're missing the presence and the present of his presence, the gift of his presence right now. The breakthrough may not come with the right answer. The breakthrough might come with the right process and the right journey that is marked by the presence of God.
That's lovely. Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly and have lived that. I have a key that says gaze. And I was reminded today of a friend who tragically passed away, and what she said a week before she passed away. She gave a quote that said, gaze at God, glance at circumstances. Gaze at God, glance at circumstance. And so for me, it's just that when your life, all the circumstances feel wrong and disappointing and you're angry about it, like it's almost like for me, it's a picture of like putting blinders on, like you're a horse and you have those blinders and you're just looking straight in front of you. You're not looking at all the circumstances around you, but you're just gazing at God, whatever answer he has, you're just gazing at him. So, wow. I love that picture. We're almost done with our time here. I feel like we could talk forever, but I'd love just to ask you one of the things that you talk about and I think is so needed as we, you know, get ready for a million soccer games tomorrow and all the different things that families and, you know, you have four kids, so you're probably running all the time. But, yes. And we've talked about this, I feel like as a society more, but about rest. And I still think we struggle with it. I think personally, we probably understand it, but I think it's very hard as parents, especially, to provide rest for not only ourselves, but also for teaching our kids how to rest when we have so many schedules and things. So could you help us out as parents, especially, how do we be examples to our kiddos in this fast-paced world of how to rest and why it's so important?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, there's no cheat code. You have to actually do it. So you've got to actually prioritize yourself. And as parents, that's probably one of the hardest things to do because we always prioritize our kids and their schedule and their needs. The problem is we are not an unlimited resource. I mean, just think about it. Your phone has to be charged every night or it's just not going to make it tomorrow. You're just not going to make it. Y'all know those days. Have you seen it like when you didn't charge your phone and you ain't got no charger? You are panic. Like an addict. Like, oh, Lord, give me a panic. Anybody got a charger. Give me a charger, Lord. Give me, oh, Lord, can I get a charge? Can I get a charger? Oh, because your world. If your phone needs it, how much more does your soul need it? I'm telling you, since the beginning of time, God has said, I designed you and I wired you a certain way. And it is not to work unlimitedly. It is to take time. To be honest, every 6 days should look different. And you should practice a Sabbath. You should stop your everyday operations and you should have a day that just set aside. It just looks different. And if you can't get a whole 24 hours, get 12. If you can't get 12, negotiate with your spouse and get 4. Or you get 2 hours and then you get 2 hours. Sometimes I'll get the kids, lock them away in the room and say, Mom's in the tub. Mom's in the tub and my wife can sit in the tub for 5 hours. I don't know how she does it. She get a scripture. She get some candles. She get a worship music.
We can read a whole book in there.
Homegirl be gone. And that's what we can get now. That's what we can get. But your soul needs a parenthesis so that you cannot work for rest. The problem is if you're just working, oh, I'm going to get a break. Some of you working now, count down to vacation because I'm working for rest. I'm just working so I can get some time off. No. God wants us to work not for rest, but he wants us to work from rest. He wants us to come from a place that's so rested and where our soul is restored and where we're renewed and we're reminded that I can stop and the world is still going. That means I'm not God. Lord, you are. So let me take down everything that says I have to have it. I have to do it. If I don't do it, it won't get done. If I don't do it, all that. Stop. You are not God. Stop and watch everyone keep breathing when you're not there. And in that moment, he restores your soul. And then you go back to work from a rested place. And you're a better mom. You're a better dad. You're better with the soccer team. You're less likely to go off on the referee tomorrow because you showed up from rest. So take the time. It's one of the hardest things, but it's one of the most fundamental principles that God put in place and he wired us. And some of us, we just don't work like that. You can't just go 7 days. You just don't work like that. That's not how you work. You were designed to work 6 days on and 1 day off. One day looks different. One day is offered up to God for delight, for rest, for things that you enjoy, things that God enjoys to do with you. It's a resetting of your soul. Mm-hmm. Reset your soul. Yeah.
I love the quote you just said, work from rest, not for rest. I need you to come. Talk to my staff. all of us need it. We work in a crisis, you know, our job is crisis, pretty 24/7. And I think you can get to that space where it's so much that you feel like the world will fall apart if you take off or if you're not 100%. And so
oh, yeah. Oh my goodness. People in ministry are people that do stuff for the compassion work, mercy work. We're the worst. We're the worst at this because we really do impact lives at a high level. Yeah. And we think if absent that we're not, God is like, yeah, I've been doing this before you. I'll be doing this after you. I'm just using you. Please don't with me. You're not God.
I remember a time when God had asked me to just be with him because I loved doing for him but not being with him, and that did not satisfy me. And I remember being like, but who will save the children? Like, who will rescue the children if I am not to rescue the children? He's like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't need you. Like, it is a privilege. It is your privilege that you get to do this. Yeah. But like, I don't need you. I love what you just said. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. Like, God has been doing this for a long time. He can find someone else who can fill in for, you know, your arrogance. Well, I love talking with you. Thank you so much for being on. And you can get your book, Disobedient God, Trusting a God Who Goes Off Script, anywhere. We'll put everything in the show notes. But I just so appreciate you being with us today and just sharing just some advice and encouragement for our guests.
Thank you so much. What an amazing time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Albert Tate, and his book, Disobedient God, is anywhere that you love to get your books. I think that it is such a good reminder that we can trust God even in the hardest circumstances, that there is light despite darkness. There's a quote that I have on my desk by Desmond Tutu, and it says, hope is believing that there is light in the midst of darkness. And I love that so much. So I hope you feel that this week. If you're going through something hard, thank you so much for spending time with us, and thank you for being love and doing good in your communities. Have a great day.